You're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WSLR.org on the internet. And this is the Peace and Justice Report. My name is Bob Connors. Tom Walker is here. John Dickman is on the control board. And the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. And Tom, the good thing today is we have a neighbor.
That's right.
Who's come into the studio.
Probably for the first time. Our next door neighbor on Kumquat Court is the Resurrection House for many, many years. And our guest today is Mason Ayers. He's the currently the interim executive director of the Resurrection House. And prior to this, he served as a volunteer as well for 9 months. His 33-year career has been spent in both the travel and the nonprofit industries. Until October 22, he was president of the Sarasota Memorial Healthcare Foundation, which I want to learn more about. Under his leadership, the foundation became one of the community's most successful nonprofit organizations. And prior to joining the Healthcare Foundation, he held senior development positions at NCH Healthcare System and at Ave Maria University in Naples, and also key marketing and management positions at Universal Studios in Orlando. He's a graduate of Florida State University. He's also a certified fundraising executive. Mason and his wife, Anne, have three children. So welcome, Mason.
Well, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Bob. It's great to be with you. Really is a treat to be able to spend a little bit of time this morning sharing what we're doing at Resurrection House. We are your neighbor, and I enjoy the opportunity to get out in the community and let people know what's happening next door.
Well, tell us all, give us an overview, what the Resurrection House does, who it serves, what the things it provides. It used on the web, I think I saw 3 days a week, and now you've added to that. So tell us all about, if you would, give us an overview of what you do.
Absolutely. So Resurrection House has been serving its mission for the last 34 years here in Sarasota.
Wow.
We started back in 1989. And we started when there was a homeless lady that was found in the bushes near Church of the Redeemer. At the time, there were several parishioners from that church that saw the lady and helped her. And that kind of sparked the idea to open up a day center here in Sarasota for the homeless. What the Church of the Redeemer did at that point is they reached out to another five churches in the downtown area, and those six churches created Resurrection House. So we're not an overnight shelter. We are an organization that provides services to the homeless community during the day. We're open from 8:30 to 2 p.m., Monday through Thursday, and then on Friday, we're open from 8:30 to noon. What we provide, if someone was to come to us needing services, first of all, we have a safe environment for them. We do work very closely with the Sarasota Police Department. They are at our door helping us check in our clients. We call our homeless population clients. So when our client comes in, for services, we can provide them a meal. We offer both breakfast and lunch. We also give them an opportunity to take a shower. We have restrooms as well. We also have clothes that are donated from the community that we can provide our clients if they need clothes. We also do their laundry. We have a group of volunteers that wash, dry, and fold.
Wow.
Our clients' laundry each day that we're open. And we also are a connection point for our clients. If they need other services like an ID, they need to get in touch with an agency that specializes in housing, we're able to connect them to that. Addiction services. If they're a veteran, we're able to work with local nonprofits here and be able to get them over to those organizations for whatever needs they might have. So we consider ourselves to be like a safe landing spot for the homeless.
Is your roughly how many people do you serve, and is it increasing or decreasing?
That's a very good question. So we serve upwards of 100 clients on a given day.
Wow.
Not all of them come in at the same time. Actually, yesterday, we had one of our highest days as far as a census that we've had in a long time. I think we had about 118 that came through our door. It does vary based on the day and also the time of the month as far as how people have other services that they access. But we still have some room to grow. We're not by any means full. We do know that there's others out in the community that we need to connect with to be able to provide our services to.
Is that number increasing or decreasing these days?
It's increasing.
Do you think the homeless population in general is increasing? Can you tell? Or it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. I mean, the only way that I can really measure it in my role is what comes through the door. Like I said, we are seeing that grow. There's other factors to that. I mean, cold weather brings folks to us. It's hard to pinpoint, you know, the overall trend that's happening. I would love to be able one day to come to our door and look out in the street and there's no line and there's no more homeless to serve. That would be a wonderful day. But until that point in time, we're there for them.
The neighborhood is changing a little bit. They've got luxury condos coming up in the area. Has that changed anything, put any pressure on you, or have you had any negative aspects of that? Has anybody complained about the people waiting for you in the morning?
I think overall we want to continue to be a good neighbor.
Sure.
We know that we're in a population that is a diverse population, but we want to make sure that we are a good neighbor to all.
And what services do you wish you could provide? I know you have a doctor in-house, right?
We do.
And a dental service is on request, is that true?
We do. I missed some of the services when I was sharing, but we also act as the post office.
That's a great service.
Yes.
Address for somebody who has no address. You're an address.
We're an address. We do have a volunteer doctor. We have now multiple barbers that come in and cut hair.
Right.
And then we have the ability to connect our clients to any legal services, dentist. We have also a chapel in our facility, and we have a team of chaplains that come in and minister to our client population as well.
Wow. And counselors as well, I guess?
I look at, we do some counseling, but it's done through our volunteers. I really look at them more as navigators, being able to connect them. We don't want to replicate services that are already out in the community. What we want to do is, like I said earlier, we want to be that connection point to be able to point them towards those services.
What services do you wish you could offer that you don't now?
That's a good question. I feel like we have a pretty good complement of things that we offer. There isn't really one thing that I could say that we would want to add at this point.
You steer your clients toward housing if they want it. The various agencies that we, for instance, have had on this program, Streets of Paradise, they furnish homes.
That's right.
That some of the churches.
We have a relationship, as I mentioned earlier, with the Sarasota Police Department.
Right.
They have a team called the Homeless Outreach Team.
Right. Hot teams. Yeah.
They come into our facility. Actually, they're in our facility right now. They come in on Wednesday mornings. And one of the services that they provide our clients is a connection to rapid housing. They also are a great resource if we find someone who's newly homeless that, you know, discovers they no longer have a roof over their head.
Right.
They can help work with that person and getting them temporary housing as well.
That's Salvation Army?
That's right, Salvation Army.
So any plans for the future, for any changes or improvements or expansion of your services plan?
So one of our big pushes right now is we want to get back open 5 days a week, full time. One of the areas that we are continuing to develop is our volunteer staff. When I came in as the interim executive director back in July, our volunteer number of volunteers was around 60 volunteers. And our mission is really very, very volunteer driven. We could not accomplish what we accomplish at Resurrection House without our volunteers. Before COVID, our volunteers were upwards of about 150. So there was a big gap there, and we've been working on closing the gap. I'm happy to share this morning that we're right there around 100 volunteers, but we still have some work to do. So we're really focused on doing more outreach into the community, those that have a heart for the homeless, that really want to help serve those in need. We want to be able to connect them to Resurrection House. So that's what we're looking at developing.
You have any opinion about affordable housing here in Sarasota, whether it's adequate, inadequate, what you would do if you could to change it?
I really don't have a deep understanding of all the issues. I mean, I can give you my two cents as a resident of Sarasota County. I mean, obviously, we need more of it. You know, we struggle, like a lot of communities do, with being able to house those that need housing. But as it relates to any insight that I can provide from my seat this morning, I'm really probably not the right person to ask.
And the way we treat our homeless in general, you're doing a great job. Is there anything you would add if you could, if you had the resources of the people or another agency? What do we still need in this town for the homeless?
I think just the ability to reach out to all that need help.
They may not know about you, or they may not want your help.
They may not know about us. We're being very intentional from a organizational point of view right now. And like I said earlier, getting out into the community and letting organizations and individuals know what we do, who we serve, because there are a lot of points in the community, like a food pantry or a church or some other type of organization, that people that need help will come to their doorstep and be looking for help, and we want them to be able to refer them over to us. So being able to build a deeper level of collaboration is something that we really want to continue to grow and focus on.
A lot of the people who are, some of the people who are homeless also have mental or mentally ill in some way or another. How do you help those people who really have a mental problem? They can be disturbing. We had a homeless marathon here at WSLR. We had people in the Fogartyville sleeping overnight. We had a microphone for 24 hours. It's broadcast all over the country. It's about 8 years ago.
Wow.
And everybody, it was great. A lot of people came up to the mic outside. But there was one or two people who created a disturbance, and the other homeless people helped calm him down and
right.
take care of him, because I think they knew him. But what do you do with people who are not quite all there mentally?
I think the first thing that we do is try to show empathy and try to respond to their needs. We are fortunate to have the police department with us.
Yes.
So if something ends up escalating,
we can
take care of it on that end as well. But, the other piece is to, develop a relationship with our clients so that there's an element of trust, mutual trust, and they see us as someone that can help them when they need help. And then having us have the ability to have those relationships with other agencies that we can then direct them to. So it's, you know, the one thing that I've learned in my role as interim executive director for the time that I serve is that it's a complicated issue. There isn't a one-size-fits-all formula that if we just did this one thing and we did it better, we could make huge impact. There's a lot of nuances that go into each and every person's
needs.
Every
person's different.
Every
person's story.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of relate it to a big puzzle, you know, 500-piece, 1,000-piece puzzle. I mean, everyone's walking in the door with their own puzzle, and the puzzle pieces don't always fit across others. I mean, everyone has their own pieces that you have to kind of work with them to fit together to get them better and get them on a path of self-sufficiency. So it's complex. It's, you know, you can't win them all. There are times where you can do your best, and you know, unfortunately, you just don't make impact. But there are also a lot of other times where you have a real opportunity to make change in someone's life, and those are the things that get you up in the morning.
Yeah.
Those are the real opportunities when you have this ability to help somebody that needs help and they want help, and their life gets turned around. And you know,
well, that's
our organization played a part in that.
And that says you want to lose clients. You want them to graduate into self-sufficiency and housing and so forth. How many permanent clients do you think you have who will never change?
That's a good question. I don't have an exact number, but I kind of look at our clients in kind of three different categories. You've got the chronic homeless that come in and we help meet their needs, but it's their lifestyle. It's
right.
The way that they live.
Right.
We need to be sensitive to that, but we can still help them.
Sure.
Then you have another group of clients that have been at the center, and something happens in their life where they want change. They want to get better.
Great.
And those are the ones when we see that, we can help them and get them to wherever they need to be to turn things around. And then the third group is the newly homeless client that comes to our door. They're wide-eyed. Something happened
right
in their life to cause them to be homeless. And it's high anxiety situation for them, but when they walk into our doors, we can wrap them with our services and give them a place to be to kind of try to figure things out, and then we can step in and help them get back to where they were before they found themselves homeless.
So you must have a group of people you call counselors or initial counselors that try to help them figure out what happened and their set of plans.
Yeah, we have on our staff, we have individuals that have spent many years helping the homeless that can step in and kind of help them on a one-on-one basis get where they need to be.
Now, you serve Central Sarasota. How about other parts of the county or Bradenton or?
We serve anybody that comes to our door.
Right.
The other thing that I will mention is that, you know, we've been around for 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have been privately funded for all 34 years. So we are not involved with government funding. We receive our support through individuals and organizations. So it gives us the ability to do what we need to do. We're also faith-based.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not only looking at the physical needs, but also spiritual needs as well while folks are with us.
Do you think that government or assistance would somehow be restrictive?
It can be. I think we've always just kind of prided ourselves that we will continue to be funded by the community.
Well, you're more independent that way in that sense.
Yep. I don't know if there's not a right or wrong there. It's just our philosophy.
Yeah. So in the other parts of the county, if people can't get here, have you tried to replicate your services elsewhere, another group of churches maybe in South County, or do you see yourself expanding?
We have not yet, but...
it's such a good model.
It is.
Why not replicate it?
It is. I think it's something that, you know, might be on our to-do list at some point, but right now... We really want to just focus on meeting the day-to-day needs of those that come to our door here.
Sure. And you're all volunteer for the most part. You're a paid employee, I assume.
I am.
And you have probably one or two more.
We have six paid staff.
Right. So, and then the rest, how many volunteers?
Right now we are a little north of 100.
Wow.
Yeah. So... it's great to watch that grow as we see more folks coming to us that want to help, being able to put them into roles at Resurrection House where they really can help. I mean, that's kind of my story as to how I got involved.
You were a volunteer.
I was. I retired from my career job, and instead of finding my way to the golf course, I started volunteering, and I Resurrection House was one of the places that I would go every week and volunteer at. And I always felt good when I left after my shift.
Sure.
There's ministry happening on both ways. I mean, we can minister to our clients, but our clients also minister to us.
Sure.
Like I said earlier, if you've got a heart for the homeless, you want to help, a role at Resurrection House is something that you should give thought to, because you're on the front lines, really helping those that need help.
Hmm. Well, Bob, you have any questions?
I was just curious about the makeup of the volunteers. You know, is it a lot of retired people, I'm assuming?
Yes. We have our demographics tend to skew 65 plus.
Mm-hmm.
But we have folks coming to us from all different points. We do get a lot of influx from churches, but other individuals, you know, there's something that has called them to come and mm-hmm. help. Like I said, it's a very fulfilling and rewarding experience.
How about the ages of your clients? You have children? You have whole families?
We do not. So we only serve adults.
Oh.
We do not serve children.
Where do they go in this county?
We will refer them to another agency in town. I believe JFCS might have a program.
Okay.
We won't ignore them. We will bring them in, but we also are very intentional in getting them to the right spot.
So adults only, so to speak.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, you hear that there are so many professionals who, one reason or another, they end up homeless, you know. Do you find that to be the case there, as far as the makeup of the homeless?
It runs the
gamut as well.
I would say. I mean, I think that a lot of them, there has been some sort of trauma that has occurred in their life that has caused them. You know, some are, they have alcohol addiction, drug addiction, and you know, other things they're dealing with, but I think the common denominator is that there was some sort of trauma mm-hmm. that happened with them. But like anything else, it's not 100% that being the case. But in general, that's what we see.
The financials are the major concern, because the rents are so outrageous.
Sure.
Yeah. And say someone who's on Social Security, their income be $1,000 to $1,500. It's not enough to even pay for
rent.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's when I say trauma, it's not, you know, physical trauma. It could be financial trauma.
Right.
You know, a lot of things, you know, happen where all of a sudden – it doesn't take much to flip yourself upside down, you know, and financial issues cause that to happen pretty quickly.
Hmm.
John? Yeah, I have a quick question. Earlier on, you were talking about who is providing services for people that you personally aren't or do not Resurrection House deal with, which in particular were children.
Yeah.
And you said JFCS. I have no idea what that means, and maybe some in our audience don't either.
Jewish Family Children's Community. Services? Or,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry I used an acronym.
No, they do a lot of good work. We should have them on the show as well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
They do so much.
They do great work.
They do so much. I'm not sure I understand the breadth of what they offer, but they're a major force here in the county.
And they also are one of our partners that comes in. You know, the way that our facility is designed, we have an area for counseling across from the main check-in area, and we bring in a lot of community partners. So, you know, they come in from time to time. Second Heart Homes is there, and other agencies can come into our center. We see ourselves as the point where we have our clients here, and they're with us. And what we want to try to do is eliminate as many barriers as possible for them to get services. So if an agency can come into our door and be able to interact with the clients and connect them to services, that's a win-win.
And they do come to you and work with you?
They do.
What a great idea.
Yep.
I still think you should try to find six other churches in the South County and try it again. You have a winning formula.
Yeah, we've been very blessed with everything. But like I said, it comes down to the community. Community is the driver. Volunteers, financial, even gifts in kind with clothes, blankets, you name it. We have people coming to our door all the time dropping off donations.
Oh, I do that. It's right there at the front desk.
Right there, yeah.
I've given plenty of clothes, and I'll be glad to give more. And you accept those donations anytime you're open.
That right? We do.
Just
and I tell people when they ask if, you know, are you going to be able to use what I drop off? And I say, I hope we'll be able to use it. But if we don't, we will find a good home for it. So it is going to someone in need.
All right. Well, I think that's about it for this half hour. But you should know we've been talking to Mason Ayers, and he's the interim director of Resurrection House right here on Kumquat Court next door to WSLR, and the amazing number of services they provide for the homeless. I hope we've done a little bit to spread the word, maybe attract a few more volunteers. You certainly, John, has already offered to help out with electrical. Thank you for the work you do, and I'd love a tour sometime.
Our door is always open to you, Tom.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mason.
Thank you, Bob.
And I want to mention that you're listening to the Peace and Justice Report right here on your own community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota. And Mason, feel free to hang out for the second half of the show.
We're going to talk to an organic farm and, again, a religiously based organization.
Great. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate the opportunity to share what we do.
Thanks. Right. Thanks again, Mason. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, let me introduce you, Andrew. Andrew Hudson is a farmer and a pastor, currently based in Sarasota. He's originally from Oregon. He is passionate about eco-theology, spreading good news about the sacred in the earth, and about ecology in the Bible. Andrew is currently in leadership at Jessica's Organic Farm and is a pastoral intern at Covenant Mennonite Fellowship. So I was pleasantly surprised to see you this past Sunday at an event at Fogartyville, Andrew. I knew you'd been away for quite a while, and when we just talked on the phone a minute ago, you said you were away for 4.5 years. And I'd like to mention that you were played an integral role in helping get WSLR off the ground way back 18, 19 years ago, and you're a strong supporter of the station. But I was, as I said, you were away for 4.5 years, so I think that's how we should begin this conversation. Where were you the last 4.5 years, Andrew?
Well, I was in northern Indiana. Got to say, it's just such a pleasure to be on your show. I've Reverend Don started it. He was a good friend of mine, and I know you've been carrying the torch for most of the show's history, so it's just such a pleasure to be on. I was in Elkhart, Indiana, northern Indiana, east of Chicago a couple hours, and I spent 4.5 years in seminary in the Mennonite Church. And like you mentioned, I'm passionate about both kind of good news spiritually and also regenerative agriculture. And I got with the Mennonites because I wanted to put those two things together. I believe that there's a lot of good news in what the earth can do and how the spirituality of the earth, how God speaks to us through the earth. So I spent 4.5 years studying scripture and also studying regenerative agriculture up in northern Indiana. And so one thing I did was I took a semester off and I interned with a kind of radical regenerative ag, no-till group of Mennonites who learned skills in Palestine and in Iraq, and they're demonstrating them there in Indiana. Because over in the Middle East, they're playing chess where we're playing checkers as far as agriculture is concerned, because they have so little rain and so little resources. I kind of put these two things together in a way that's been really inspiring for me and something I want to keep pursuing.
Well, how did the idea come to you? I know you had been working at Jessica's Organic Farm before you left, right? Way back 5 or 6
years. Yeah. I was here for 11 years before I left.
And I know you mentioned you combined the Mennonite culture with the organic farming, but how did it evolve? How did you decide, well, I'm going to apply to the seminary and see where it takes me? What were the motivating forces behind you taking this major step?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to go way back in my history. I have pastors in my background. I have farmers in my background. And my grandmother was born in the Congo. Her parents were missionaries. And so, you know, your question, I think a lot of people would ask it that way, you know, like, how did you put these two things together? But for me, they've always been the same topic, and I'm trying to put them back together because I believe the spirituality of land and the spirituality of people is not a separate thing. And those come together in food. And as I talk to people, I sort of went in this direction because as I talk to people, I find a lot of people actually agree with that when I really connect with them. So I think we need to put back together something that has been artificially separated.
You know, just this morning, I was on YouTube, and I plugged in sacred nature. Sacred nature is sacred. That's what I put in. And the first person who came up who was giving a presentation was Karen Armstrong.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, so good. You're familiar with her. I don't have to go for any further. Can you talk a little bit about Karen Armstrong?
I can't say I've studied her, but I'm a fan. She is a scholar of the Abrahamic faiths, so she transcends Christianity, Judaism, Islam in her scholarship. And I think she does a great job of explaining to the public what's so great about all three of those religions. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of division there and a lot of distrust. And so, I mean, you know, maybe we could go into those details if you really wanted to go in that direction. But I think the most important thing about Karen Armstrong is she helps people find the natural points of connection among these religions that actually have a lot in common.
Well, I was fascinated. I guess I listened to about 10 minutes of her talk. And, you know, she made the point that God is in everything, you know, God in nature. I mean, she's talking about how long, you know, these redwood trees have been around and the dolphins and the whales and just nature in general, how integral a role it plays in humanity, and people take advantage of nature as far as so much enjoyment is derived through nature. People go hiking, people go to the beach, people grow all different types of plants and plant and do organic farming. But so talk a little bit about that in terms of what you're looking to accomplish and the sacred in nature and getting that point across to people so that they realize how important it is.
What a great question. I think about this all the time. First of all, it's super important for those of us from what we think of as Western civilization, but industrial civilization, to recognize that there are a lot of cultures that are way ahead of us on this. So when I was in Northern Indiana, one reason I went to that seminary, it's called Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary, I went there because they have a learning posture toward their local indigenous people, the Potawatomi Native Americans. An awful lot of Native American groups, and it's important to not just run them all together, but an awful lot of Native American groups and indigenous groups have a lot to teach us about how to spiritually be in a certain place. You know, so in Christian terms, I would say God interacts with us differently in each location. So, you know, so there's a different natural spirituality to Florida than there is to Northern Indiana. And if you have local indigenous people, you can learn a lot about how that spirituality works from the people who've been there for hundreds of generations. And I bring that up partially because it's especially tricky to live out the spirituality of Florida because industrial civilization either ran off or killed or is responsible for the dying of, you know, almost all of the indigenous people here. So I feel like what I'm trying to do is actually trickier here because we learned an awful lot about the indigenous spirituality of Indiana from the Potawatomi. But that said, the other thing I would say about that is we are all able to pay attention locally, and especially if you do that in community, you can get on board. You know, it takes time, but you can get on board with the, you know, like, what does a local area grow? If you learn what naturally grows here, you can start eating that, and there's a natural spirituality that you start to resonate with. And, you know, I wish that I had more direct things to say, but if there were more indigenous people here to refer to, that's kind of what my entry point would be. So I don't know, does that sound a little vague, or what do you think of what I've said so far?
Well, it sounds good to me. I mean,
sounds beautiful.
Yeah. It
sounds like the truth.
Yeah, John said it sounds like the truth. I agree with that. But in speaking of the Mennonites, Andrew, you see so many Mennonites this time of year coming from Indiana and Ohio and the Midwest, and they're riding around on their tricycles on Bahia Vista and Beneva. And could you talk a little bit about the Mennonite community? And I'm always interested in saying, well, what really is the difference between the Mennonites and the Quakers? I'm sure you can address that question.
Now, you said, I think you said Mennonites and Quaker. Did you mean Mennonites and Amish?
Yes, I meant Amish. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Right, because, yeah, that's a real common question. Okay, so bear with me, because the answer is necessarily a little complicated. We all descend, Mennonites and Amish and Church of the Brethren and Hutterites, there are a bunch of different groups that all trace back to 16th century Europe. And that's because after, you know, Martin Luther put the 95 Theses on the door and he started the Lutheran Church kind of split off from the Catholic Church, right?
Yes.
Well, there were an awful lot of groups all over Europe that looked at the Lutheran Church and more or less said, hey, you're kind of just recreating Catholicism. And so now there's kind of two, what they now call magisterial churches. And we don't want either of these things, which, of course, these days there's a lot of reasons to say, hey, I don't want I don't want either of these two options, you know, like politically. So there were an awful lot of people who questioned the supposed two options they had. And that especially centered around baptism, because baptizing as an infant was the way you got somebody locked into your group. You know, you baptize a baby as a Catholic, they're Catholic for life. And then all the inheritance, all the land that they inherit, continues to stay Catholic. So there is a power and a economic force in what was supposedly a religious thing. You with me so far?
I believe so. Oh, we with, yeah. Oh, we're with Andrew.
Sure.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
Keep on going.
So often what is supposedly religious is actually about power and economics. And so there were a whole bunch of people who said, no, we're not going to baptize as infants. We're going to baptize as people as adults when they choose what church they want to be part of. And so those people got called Anabaptists. It was a pejorative term. It was seen as a bad thing to rebaptize or Anabaptize. But they did it anyway, and they got in a lot of trouble. And those were the ancestors of both Mennonites and Amish. And the Amish were people who chose to go in a more structured direction, starting in the early 1600s, actually. So it was all kind of the same movement for a while, and then the Amish sort of formed their own thing. But they all trace back to 16th century Europe and these courageous decisions to not go along with the magisterial churches.
Well, speaking of the community here, are they... The Amish and Mennonites who come from Indiana?
And because they believe in their own, because they believe in personal conscience, there are actually a lot of different varieties of Mennonites and a lot of different varieties of Amish. So from within the community, we don't think of it so much as Mennonites or Amish. There's Beachy Amish, there's Beachy Mennonite. Those two groups are actually really similar.
Yes.
So there are some Mennonites and Amish that are actually very similar. There are definitely Mennonites that are very, very different from my group. So it just gets complex. But the main thing is those are both trajectories that historically come out of these conscience-based forms of Christianity.
Well, we'll listen to the Peace and Justice Report. This is Andrew Hudson. He's a pastoral intern. Was that the what you're considered right now?
That's right. That's what I'm doing right now.
And you're going to be speaking at the Covenant. What's the name of the church? Or is it called a church? You're going to be speaking not this Sunday, the following Sunday.
That's right. And yeah, Covenant Mennonite Fellowship.
All right. So. So obviously you're committed, Andrew, after 4.5 years in seminary school and the fact that you've been into organic farming all this time. And so how do you feel about the commitment you've made at this point?
The connection cut off. What was the last part of the question?
How do you feel about being committed now into what you're doing, coming back to Florida and being... back into organic farming and just doing what you're doing?
Well, first of all, it's so nice to be warm.
right.
Man, northern Indiana is really cold. So yeah. It's really great to be here. It's really great to be where there's a community radio station. There's just a lot of things that I really enjoy. But the... You know, the main feeling I have is I've been working on how to live out my Christianity in a way that makes sense during the time of climate change, you know, during the time of ecological craziness. And I feel like I and some of my Mennonite friends have been working on that and, you know, following some indigenous leadership, but also practicing things on land in a way that brings a lot of good news. So I'm very hopeful about that.
Well, we need more people who follow, who will follow that path, who can come to the realization that there's nothing more important than the land being sacred, and especially when you can, you know, eat off the land. There's so many people who, you know, rely now more than ever on organic farming. And maybe you should talk a little bit about Jessica's farm, because I happen to go to Warden's farm at the Sarasota Farmers Market almost every week, and I know Jessica is another alternative for people. So could you just talk about Jessica's a little bit?
Yeah. We are one of the organic farms in the area. We have a long-standing friendship with Warden. And so, I mean, the first thing I'll say is, in terms of our mission, we have the opposite of a feeling of competition with farms like Warden. We know there's a need for so much more good food to get out there, good and local food. So I can say with confidence, I'm not the spokesperson for the vision here. That's Bill Pischer, our founder. But this with what I think of as a Jeffersonian vision of lots of small farms being the fabric for the economy. And we are trying to both provide food and demonstrate a really good way to grow food. So we have, in the past, we've provided well over 100,000 starts to education programs. You know, we do some outreach stuff. And then the core of our operation is using naturalized grasses to mulch with and then to plant out about 40 different types of crops in any given year. And we have about 400 customers a weekend come to our market here. So it's a pretty busy place, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we take young people and help them learn how to grow food. And, you know, young people really thrive on something that combines learning with, like, being in their body and interacting well. So that's just kind of a overview of what we do here.
And could we just get back to climate change for a minute? And, you know,
yeah.
As far as the educating people and letting them know, what would you suggest that the average person can do here in Sarasota to play a little role in helping the situation as far as climate change and the damage that it's causing all over the world?
Well, I mean, Wendell Berry comes to mind. Are you familiar with Wendell Berry?
I recognize his name, but not so much with his work, no.
If I had to recommend one author, it might be Wendell Berry. And he talks a lot about how are we going to, in Christian terms, contribute to the salvation of the world? And, you know, how is the world going to be saved from this chaos that's going on? And he always emphasizes that it's going to be a million little things that are all done locally rather than one big global solution. So so I have a couple ideas I'll tell you. I'm not going to avoid your question, but I do want to say it's going to be different things for different people. But one thing I'm offering is I'm teaching what I call Sabbath gardening, which is a way for small communities like churches, but schools could do it, other people could do it, where a community can get to know its own land, have a relationship there, and grow food in the process. And so, you know, the very basic idea is to recognize that the land that we are on every day is sacred, where we don't usually think of the places we are all the time as sacred land. Like, if you think of sacred land, you might think of a forest or maybe Mayaca Park or the beach or something, you know, and it's the ground right under our feet where we are all the time. To try to learn to see that as sacred, I think that's a journey, you know, in a metaphorical sense. We are so trained to ignore the land under our feet, but that's what I'm working on, and I think you have to do it as groups. You can't do that as an individual, and so you have to, like, have conversations with the people who are where you are every day and figure out what it means to you for your land to be sacred, and then you know, plant a garden or remediate, you know, if there's pollution, maybe you can help clean that up. You know, there's an awful lot you can do right where you are to live out the sacredness of that land. So that's kind of the general thought that I'm working on. And then I have a specific method for churches that I'm working with some congregations on.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So Sabbath.
We have about 4 or 5 minutes left, Andrew. So just go into whatever you feel you have time to get across.
Yeah, that's great. I'll describe Sabbath gardening, and then I'll tell you the YouTube that people can watch. Congregations usually think of the land as just a place to have their building and their parking lot. And when I talk with people, I always get this kind of light bulb that goes on, like, yeah, you're right. This land is also a spiritual thing. And, you know, I can't believe I haven't thought of connecting that. And the Bible is filled, and Karen Armstrong's really good at articulating this. The Bible is filled with nature references that aren't just metaphors. It really is the spirituality of being in a specific place that is being portrayed in the Bible all the time. You know, in Genesis 2, you know, Adam was put in the garden, and sometimes it says to till and keep it. But there's also a level of meaning that means to serve and to preserve the garden. So there is a level of service that Adam was put in the garden to do. And I have experienced that as a farmer, and I think a lot of people, when they spend time with land, they start to develop a sense of relationship. And that kind of relationship is the essence of what I'm trying to point people toward. So to get congregations to do some Bible studies where they learn about the relational part with land in the Bible, and then plant a garden and learn from that over 7 years. So that's, you know, in 3 minutes, that's maybe all I can say, but I connect people with the biblical tradition. And the key thing is, it really is in the Bible. This isn't just some liberal idea where I'm trying to get people to go away from the actual thing and then live out my scheme. It's through the Bible, and it's exciting. People get really excited when they discover, oh, this is actually something that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So on YouTube, if somebody looks up Sabbath gardening, I think my video is the third thing that comes up. But I've got a brief video about that goes into how I use the church year, because we need to, you know, have seasons. You know, we need to do this according to whether it's in the fall or the spring or whatever. And I'd be happy to have people get in touch with me at the church, too. So that's covenantmennonite.org.
And if they want to hear you in a week and a half, I guess it's February 11th at 10:30. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And we're down on Ashton Road. And, yeah, people are quite welcome.
Well, Andrew, I'm glad I accidentally ran into you the other day. And I as I said, didn't even know you were back from your long 4.5-year journey to Elkhart, Indiana, and what you had studied and what you've learned and what you have brought back to Sarasota. So thank you very much for being on today. I know you have to get back to the farm and keep things going there. So thank you so much, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It's great talking with you.
Okay. Bye for now.
All right, bye.
Yep.
Well, that was a great guest, Bob.
Yeah, it's you know, a beautiful thing when you just run across someone accidentally, and
sure,
they have so much to talk about.
And you know, the question on my mind is, what happened to crop agriculture? You know, in this county, it's almost all developed, or Lakewood Ranch or whatever. What are there, Jessica farms? Are they disappearing, or are they increasing all over the state? How do we stop that erosion of cropland into urban or suburban land. It seems to be all one way, one direction.
Oh, I know.
I don't know how big Jessica's farm is, but that's one of the few remaining. We need to encourage that kind of stuff.
Well, I know the Chris and Eva Warden. I'm sure Chris will be happy to talk to us about it on a Saturday morning.
Are they in Sarasota County?
They're in Punta Gorda.
Punta Gorda.
Yeah, and they come up to the farmer's market now for close to 20 years, and then they go up to St. Pete Farmer's Market, and then they're down in Fort Myers. And they produce an incredible amount of organic food, and it's the nice thing about them is when you go and you look at it, it's been freshly picked within 24 hours, and their prices are great, you know, that is virtually the same as if it wasn't organic. And so, I'm sure Chris and Eva would be happy to talk about that. I know Rebecca Koster on her show, Healthy Living Hour, about 4 months ago, did an hour-long interview with Eva Warden. And they both have doctorates, so they're both well-versed in the subject. So I'm sure they'll, and they even teach people. They even do classes, and
wow.
So they would have a good idea. They'd be good people to talk to.
They use volunteers to pick crops sometimes, don't they?
Yeah. So we have about 30, 40 seconds to go, Tom, if you want to let the audience know who you have lined up for next week.
Well, actually, Bob, I don't have anybody for next week.
Oh, we're open. We're open.
It's a minor omission here. So yeah. We're open to suggestions.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, we accept invitations from all nonprofits, people doing good in the world, to come on our show and explain what they do. That's our main purpose here. It's not to hear me and Bob talk. It's for you, the nonprofit, or the professor, or the filmmaker, to tell us what you know and get some of that knowledge out to the world. And that's what we want. You can feel free to call us at WSLR.